All right, we're ready. So I'd ask now your prayerful and your considerate attention for our brother Bob Hedrick as he presents the message of the hour.
Thank you, Glenn. Good morning. It's good to see each of you. All this electronic stuff is most to make our life easier, right? Maybe. Well, it's good to be home. Last Sunday, when I was in Missouri, your brothers and sisters there asked that I would send their love and their best wishes, and so consider yourself best wished. But I do have a message I'd like to bring to you this morning. It's hard to believe we've already done a month or a week of 2006, and it's always different when you, the holiday season. You're busy preparing something for a meal. You're busy doing a lot of things, and it's always January 2nd or January 3rd that reality slaps you back in the face, and say, "Oh yeah, it's time to get back in the battle." And so hopefully you guys weathered the battle this week, and have a chance now to have another break. To be strengthened and edified, because tomorrow morning we're gonna go right back out in the battle again, and our lives continue. But I have something I would like to talk about. We're gonna talk this morning about Spartans. No, not Michigan State. Who are the Spartans? Somebody tell me. Greek. Who? They're Greek. They were Greek. A lot of people were Greek, but they weren't all Spartans. They were. What words do you come to mind when you think of a Spartan? Justin said they were fighters. They were soldiers. Yeah. Were they? Did they instill fear in the people around them, you think? Oh yeah, I would imagine so. What do you guys think about when you hear the name Spartan? Spartacus? Okay. Different era, a few thousand years off, but maybe that'll be my next sermon. Okay, but Hugh.
I think of a group of men that were trained.
They were trained. You're absolutely right. They were trained militarily. We're going to get a history lesson in Spartans today. Hope you don't mind. Just because I read a book and it interested me. So you're punished with my inquisitive nature. The Spartans were kind of a unique town. But in Greece, they were called city-states. This city was it wasn't like this city was part of a bigger government that had a state and then a national government. Each town was its own country, basically. Okay, and Sparta was one of those towns, and Athens was one of those towns, and Corinth was another one of those towns. They all were independent. Okay, and the Greeks are the ones that we get our democracy from. It's the birthplace of that, of the notion that that one man had a right to vote. So this is really the beginnings of Western civilization. Well, Sparta was just a regular city state like the rest of them, until a king named Lycurgus came along, and they did something different. They elected their kings. They had to prove themselves, and then they were elected. So they elected this guy named Lycurgus, and he had a unique perspective. I don't know, brainstorm an idea. But he realized that for Sparta to grow, they had to do one thing very efficiently. The way things happened back then, they didn't send their football teams over to the next town and they had a big football game, and whoever won the game, they were the victors. No, they sent their armies over. Okay? And remember how talking about David's story, how in the spring of the year when the kings go out to go fight, and that was the deal, You spent, you put your crops in the field, and then when the crops were ready, while the crops were growing, you went out into the field to battle. But the rest of the Greek city-states were different. The rest of the Greek city-states, they had like national guards. They'd get together 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the year, and they would go get together to train. And they'd go out and they'd, beat each other up and train for the battles. Well, this King Lycurgus, he saw the weakness in that. And so he made up a set of rules for Sparta. He a Spartan was a warrior. A Spartan couldn't be a shepherd. He wasn't a house painter. He didn't work on computers. He wasn't a farmer or carpenter, a bricklayer, whatever. He was a warrior. He was not allowed to learn any other trade than to be a warrior. Okay, well then how did they get houses and food and everything else? This Lycurgus, he made it so that the every Spartan was a warrior, so then they would go out to these other city-states, conquer them, bring them back as slaves, and the slaves were the ones who were the blacksmiths and the sheep herders and the farmers and everything else. But the Spartans themselves, they had one job. They were warriors. They were not allowed any other responsibility, any other job. It's like when we had this baby blessing this morning. When this baby was born in Sparta, they would, they'd take it to the elders, and this baby would be taken to the elders, and they would look at it and make sure it had 10 fingers and 10 toes and was healthy. And if that baby reached out and grabbed that finger and had a strong grip, so okay, this would be a Spartan. If it didn't, then they did some other things, but we're not going to go there. I don't want to go there. But they took this child, and they said, okay, this child is going to grow up to be a Spartan. Who's going to sponsor it? And there would be an older gentleman or a family who would say, okay, I will sponsor this child. And that sponsorship was like a godfather. It would say, okay, I'm going to make sure this child gets educated. Because remember, these guys are warriors. They died from time to time. And the idea was that if anything happened to the dad or the rest of the family, there had to be someone who would accept that responsibility. And they would accept that, they would accept that as a sponsorship, that I will sponsor this child. And so this child would grow up in the regular home and be playing like our kids do until about age 10. And at age 10, everything changed. They got taken out of the home and got put in a special training session, and it took about 10 years to train. Remember how the other city-states were like National Guards? They'd train, a couple weeks out of the year. Spartans trained every day. It was something that like I said, they didn't have to worry about putting the crop in. They didn't have to worry about building the barns. They had one job. They had to get prepared to go to battle. And their training was brutal. These boys that were being trained, and it was brutal, but it prepared them. They used to have to, when they're in their school, they would have to run across this open field. And at the other end of the field was their meal, their food. Well, so you had to run for your food. Okay, that's okay. Problem is, all along the way, they were getting beaten by their trainers. And while they're trying to eat, the trainers are sitting there whipping them and beating them. They had to eat as fast as they could, as much as they could, then they had to run all the way back across this open field, getting beat the whole time. Jenny Craig couldn't do that. But it made them very, very tough. Because it was saying, look, you are going to be in some difficult situations. This is where you learn how to deal with it. When they had an infraction in their training, there was such a high degree of expectation that you know, they tie a rope between two trees, and the person who had messed up would have to hold that rope, and then they'd start whipping him. And all he had to do was let go of the rope and fall. Whipping was done. Problem is, if he dropped too early, he was considered, hey, he's not tough enough. He's not strong enough. And he would be kicked out of the community. And sometimes that drive to be accepted, the drive to prove themselves, that they would hold on even until they died. They would get beaten so bad. But it was more disgraceful to let go. They held on. These Spartans, you know, they wore armor. They had a shield. They had a helmet. They carried spears. They wore skirts. That's what they did back then. But they were prepared. And they had their colors were red and maroon. And they always had their hair long. So if you can imagine yourself, you know, looking across this open field at this group of people. And they would stand shoulder to shoulder. They'd have a shield in front of them and a spear right here. And they would be standing shoulder to shoulder all across this front. And not just that, they'd be three or four deep. Because while the front line had their shield like this and the spear like this, right behind them with their shield in their back was another guy with a shield right pushing him in the back with another spear coming right over his head. And that happened back, three or four back. And so they would march in step, and they would push themselves across this field of battle to engage the enemy. So all you see is this wall of shields and spears, and realizing that, hey, this isn't the Wednesday night knitting club that's coming across here. This is the Spartans. These are the people that we heard about that would come in and destroy and conquer all these things. They were very brutal. Their fear went before them. But they would walk across this field, and their shields were interlocked. And they would march across the field, and there was one individual. You know, the officers weren't in the back. The officers were on the front line. Because they're the ones that set the cadence. They're the ones that said, okay, this is how fast we're going across this field. This is, you know, because they had to fight united. In that training that they had when they were boys, you know, they to practice the push against these other armies, they would practice push against trees until they could push over a tree this big around. Just by pushing on it, you know, with 100 guys until they could push over a tree. That's what they would do. And the most important piece of armor they had was considered their shield. They wore helmets, like I said, and they had shields and they had spears. And this is nothing like in the Bible about the armor of God. This was just armor. But you could lose your helmet in your training. And that was, yeah, okay. It wasn't that big a deal. But you had to take care of your shield foremost. Because if in the process of your training you leave your shield over there and you need it and you don't have it, you would be severely punished. Because your shield was not for you. Your shield was for the guy next to you. Because when they were marching shoulder to shoulder, you were actually behind the shield of the guy next to you. And the guy next to you is hiding behind your shield because you got your spear right here. And right where those two shields come together, that's where it would your spear went. And because if you lost your helmet, you might get killed. I'm sorry, that's bad. But that was your own fault. You lose your shield, this guy gets killed. And that was considered much worse. So I hope I paint a picture of this is what Spartans were like. They were extremely tough. They were very dedicated. And you're going, what in the world is he talking about? Well, these Spartans, like I said, they were very good at what they did. Well, there was a battle almost 500 years before Christ called the Battle of Thermopylae. Anybody hear of it? A couple of you? And Thermopylae was a unique kind of place in the Greek peninsula, that there was a mountain on one side and the ocean was on the other. It was only about a quarter, half mile wide. It was very narrow. Well, this was in the time of King Darius of Persia. King Darius of Persia was conquering the world and doing a very good job of it. And so he came across Thrace and these other upper Macedonia coming down into Greece, and he was going to conquer Greece next. And the Greece was not prepared. Remember, Greece was all these little tiny cities that fought amongst themselves. They were not united. But the call went out saying, hey, the Persians are coming. We got to do something. And so they sent some Spartans. They sent 300 Spartans. And as the Spartans went up to meet them in this battle, they had a couple thousand of some other city-states of soldiers from other city-states that came with them to meet the Persians at this place called Thermopylae. There was more than 300 Spartans. There was more than a couple thousand Greek warriors. But that's how many they sent to this place called Thermopylae. Well, the Persians was a little bit more than 300. The historians say anywhere from 250,000 to 2 million people was in the Persian army marching down to Thermopylae. And they came down and they met the Spartans. And the Spartans fought them for 4 days. This small group of people held off for 4 days. On the fourth day, the Persians had figured out a way to get around the mountain and come in from behind. And they knew it. They knew they were going to die. And so they sent the other soldiers away, and only the Spartans stayed. Those 300 Spartans. For that last day, to stop the Persians. Because the whole time that the Spartans are fighting the Persians, the rest of the Greek city-states are becoming united. They're recognizing the threat. And they're getting prepared to meet the Persians on the next field of battle. And because these 300 Spartans made a stand, it saved Greece. In reality, it saved Western civilization. Because that's where the democracy we enjoy now came from. Every one of those 300 Spartans died. Every last one of them. And then they set up a little memorial there on the road. You know, remember the Spartans. Remember the 300 that were willing to stand and protect their homes and their families. And guess what? They did. Because they made a stand, Darius sent a bunch of his soldiers around in ships to come around. Well, the Greeks had a better navy and they destroyed the navy. They went around the other way and came down to fight the Greeks on the land. And by that time, the Persians were worn out. And the Greeks beat them. Because of what those 300 did. Well, we have a calling that's not the same, but similar. I'm not saying we should all become Spartans, because the Spartans prayed to Apollos and Athena and all these gods that Paul was talking about on Mars Hill. But we are born to be Christians. The Spartans were born to become warriors. We are born to a different purpose, but we have a purpose nonetheless. And it can't be a purpose that's like the National Guard, where we come on Sunday morning from 11 to 12 and from 5:30 to 7. And consider that training. We can't come to a couple reunions a year and say, well, that's preparing me. It has to be something we do every day. I'm going to turn to it real quick. With 2 Nephi, the first chapter in 116 verses, it says, we are created that we might have joy. And Christ came that we can have that joy. We're commanded to glorify God in all that we do. That is our purpose. That's our job. Our true calling is not to... My calling is not to be a fireman. It's not to be a teacher. Not to be a... whatever, a computer, a mechanic. That's not our job. Our job is to be a Christian. Our job is to proclaim Christ, to witness to those around about us. Our job is to live the commandments of Jesus Christ. Remember David and Goliath? Everybody knows the story of David and Goliath. David's this young man, great deal of faith. And Goliath has been taunt. How many days did Goliath taunt the Israelites? Remember? It was 40 days. This big old dude come out in the middle of this valley and just blaspheming God. And all the Israelites are scared to death because nobody wants to face him. And so David comes up there and he sees it and says, how come you're letting this guy get away with this? I'll go do it. What had happened to David before then? You remember? Yeah. He slew a lion and a bear with an AK-47, right? No. With his bare hands. You know, David was just a shepherd. He was out there just protecting his sheep. That's what he thought he was doing. But God was preparing him to face Goliath by making him face a lion and a bear. Because that was his thing. It was, hey, you know, because they were saying, hey, you're too young to do this. And saying, hey, wait a minute, I've already killed a lion and a bear. I can take him with me and God. God had prepared him for that. God, you know, when I look at my life, you know, at my career, if you'd have told me 17 years ago I was going to be a captain on a fire truck, I'd have said, you're nuts. If you'd have told me I was going to be a pastor of a church, I'd say, you're more than nuts. I had made up my mind that I wasn't even going to test anymore for captain. But God said, you know, open the way. It was out of my hands and says, okay, I'm going to place you here as a captain. And those months that I was a captain before I became pastor prepared me for this. In all of our lives, we have to understand that God is preparing us for something in the future. Those Spartans that were, you know, enduring that extremely difficult training, it was preparing them for the field of battle. God's doing the same thing for us. He's preparing us for a future trial. He's strengthening our faith. Those 2,000 stripling soldiers in the Book of Mormon, they were prepared by their mothers for what the God had planned to accomplish with their lives. So it doesn't mean just because we're not getting beaten while we're eating, doesn't mean we're not being prepared. God is preparing us. One of the characteristics of these Spartans was they were not just extremely proficient warriors. They had a sense of humor that was renowned in the ancient world. They weren't just warriors. They appreciated music and poetry, so it's not like they were barbarians or anything. But they were renowned for their wit. There was a guy named King Leonidas. King Leonidas is the one that was leading those 300 in the Battle of Thermopylae. And King Leonidas, they're at this camp looking out at 250,000 Persians. And somewhere along the way, they capture this Persian guy, or the Persian guy comes over to try and talk him out of fighting. He's saying, "You don't understand. When these Persians come, there are so many of them that when their archers get close and they pull back their bows and they let loose their bows, there are so many of them they block out the sun." And King Leonidas, he goes, "Oh, good. That means we get to fight in the shade." That was their attitude. And you know, we're never going to be faced with 250,000 archers shooting arrows at us. But we can have that same attitude. Over in James in the first chapter, James in the first chapter, I mean, it's something we've heard of many times. In the second verse says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing." That there's a purpose behind what we endure. That those young boys that were being trained and brutalized in our modern thinking, they could see that this was preparing them for their life. 1 Peter in the sixth verse says, "Wherein you greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, you are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen ye love, in whom though now you see him not, yet believing ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls." It's recognizing that this day that we're living in, every day that we live is preparing us for the next trial. And these trials are, you know, I'm going to make a great prognostication. Karnak the Magnificent here. Guess what? Sometime during this year, somebody's going to lose a job. Somewhere, somehow. Somewhere, sometime this year, somebody's going to get sick. I'm reasonably sure of that. Someone may get cancer. I'm pretty sure that sometime, somewhere, somebody's going to die. Sometime this somewhere, there's going to be a family that struggles and may be divided. maybe a great trial in a family. Those are the trials. Those are the tests we face. Those are the battles. Those battles of our mind. Recognize that those things are going to come. No amount there's nothing we're going to do that's going to prevent those events from happening. If God so ordains that this is what we have to endure to prepare us for whatever He holds for the future. In Acts, in the 5th chapter, the apostles had just been told, you know, again, not to stop talking about that Jesus guy. They brought him to the council, and they had, you know, trying to stop him. And there were some speeches made, you know, for him and for against him, and at the end of it, they said, okay, you know, no more preaching Jesus. And they said, you know what, we have a responsibility to obey God more than you. And so they sent him out. Fortieth verse. It says, and to him they agreed, and when they had called the apostles, they called them back in there with them, and beat them. And when they had called the apostles and beaten them, they commanded that they should speak in the name of Jesus, not speak in the name of Jesus, and let them go. This is like King Leonidas. It says, and they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for His name. We got to get beaten. That's what they were doing. That was their outlook, saying, guess what? That means we're doing our job. Yes! And so then they quit preaching Jesus, right? No. And daily in the temple and in every house, they ceased not to teach and preach Jesus Christ. They were going to do what God had told them to do no matter what. And there was no amount of beatings or trials or difficulties in their life was going to prevent that. They had that same attitude that King Leonidas had. You know, when I was back in Missouri, this guy talked to me and was talking in the church about a movie that's coming out. I don't even know the name of it. He didn't know the name of it. But it comes out on June 6, 2006. Six. And it's supposed to be extremely, you know, anti-Christ and anti, you know, the Christians are the bad guys. And, you know, I got to admit, I'm thinking, yes! Great! Because, you know, because he was worried about, you know, persecution and all of this kind of stuff that they were was gonna begin. It's like, wait a minute. You mean to tell me just now you realize that the media and Hollywood, they're anti-Christian? Oh, really? I didn't know that. We've known that for years. It's just now it's clear. Now when this movie comes out and somebody says, well, how about these, you know, the Christians are the bad guys? Oh, really? Well, that gives me an opportunity to visit with them and say, hey, here's the truth. To me, that's just an opening of doors. If you look back in history at the early church, when the church was persecuted, when they were getting thrown in front of lions and beaten and killed, that's when the church grew. That's when it blossomed. It was only when it became easy that the decline of the church began. When it was being persecuted, it was strengthened. God was using that persecution to strengthen His people. And they did great, great things. Over in Titus, Titus in the second chapter. You know how I told you that these children were sponsored by the grown-ups, that they would accept that responsibility of making sure this child was taught and raised. And really, we have that same responsibility. In the second chapter of Titus, and I'll start with the first verse, it says, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith and charity and patience. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that their word of God may not be blasphemed. Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded." He's talking about these people that were the older parts of this group of Christians were supposed to be teaching the younger ones. And that's different how now? We have a responsibility to be an example to those that are younger than us, to teach them. When the Spartans fought, like I said, they fought as a unit. All their shields were interlocked. When the officer stepped out walking, they all stepped in the same step. It wasn't like they marched. And they marched across this field. Okay? And they had to stay together. If the officer was going too fast and the people didn't keep up, there was a gap in that wall. And then that in that gap the enemy could exploit and destroy them. If the people that were interlocked, if they went faster than the officer, then that same thing, the wall, the shield was not together. You know, I'm not going to turn to it because I'm way past time already. But in 1 Corinthians, it talks about how we're the body of Christ. We are a united people. You know, some people are the thumb, and some people are the ear, and some people are the knee. We all have different responsibilities. But we have to fight with that same cohesiveness that the Spartans did. We have to be, you know, the Spartans had a common enemy. It was whatever city was across that field of battle. The Spartans, I'm going to turn over to Mosiah in the 9th chapter. Mosiah 9, I'm just going to read one verse. That's what Alma was commanding his priests to teach. "And he commanded them that there should be no..." This is the 54th verse. "And he commanded them that there should be no contention one with another, but they should look forward with one keen eye, having one faith and one baptism, having their hearts knit together in unity and in love one towards another." Those Spartans, when they were in that, it was called a phalanx, is what they called it when they all had their shields knit together. When those guys were on a field of battle and their shields were interlocked, they had one enemy, and that was the other side of the battlefield. If they were fighting amongst themselves, what would happen to them? They would be destroyed. like Alma was saying, look forward with one eye. Everybody's looking at the same direction. Everybody's looking at the real enemy, the one who would destroy it. And that's what we have to do as well. We have to be able to look at our adversary and see that is where our true enemy lies. I am quite confident, knowing human nature, that among the Spartans, they didn't always agree. That they had differences of opinion. But they were able to, despite those, be united against a common enemy. Alma was talking about how there should be no contention one with another. Is there conflict among us sometimes? Okay, this is a reality check. Yes. But there's no contention when we deal with the conflicts. Scripturally. When we handle our problems scripturally, we become united. We're facing the common enemy. Reality. Is everybody holding their shield in the phalanx? No. So what do we have a responsibility. We should be helping people say, hey, don't forget your shield. Get it up. We should be preparing before the battle, saying, okay, this is how you use it. We should be united against the common enemy because he seeks to divide us and destroy us. You know, there's another group of 300 in the Bible. Anybody remember what it is? Gideon. Gideon started out with, I think, 32,000 or something like that, if I remember right. Israelites that went to go battle the Midianites. How many were the Midianites? I'm sorry, what? 200,000? Anybody else guess? It's a trick question, it doesn't say. It says they were numberless. Their campfires were as the sands of the sea. Let alone the people that were around the campfires. We have no idea how many of the Midianites were. But Gideon took 300, right? No, God selected 300. You know, in the Battle of Thermopylae, when the Spartans went to face the Persians, they relied on their military training. They relied upon the arm of flesh. They relied upon their shields and their spears, the physical tools that they had. And every one of them died. Gideon and the 300 that were with him went with God. And they took pitchers and fire and torches. And the scriptures tell us the reason why God did it with 300 was so that no one could say that it was the Israelites that made that won this battle. Remember, because the Midianites were destroyed with these 300. They couldn't say the Israelites did it. God did it. I want you to do a mental exercise. What do you think God could do with 300 passionate, active members who are dedicated to Him? You know, the bishops may not want to hear this, but God doesn't need money. We owe our tithing out of a commandment from Him. But He doesn't need our money. Somehow He managed to create the universe without our credit cards. That He didn't have to finance it through us. He has that ability. Don't tell the bishops I said that. But more importantly, he needs us to be prepared for the day that we live in so that he can use us as 300 of Gideon. Why? Because this small group of people scattered all over the world, they don't amount to a hill of beans. And when the gospel goes around the world, it's not because we did it. It's because God prepared the way. Remember that. That's why we're here. We're here to obey His commandments, to show Him that we're willing to be active and passionate about serving Him in every aspect of our life. Not just on Sundays or Wednesday nights, but wherever He places us, at work or at school, that we can glorify Him. It's not easy always to see reality when we're in the midst of the trial. It's not always easy to see that God is preparing us, that He is there, whether we know it or not. But He is. We have a master commander who is that one that's when we are united, He is the one that sets the pace. He's the one that is preparing us. He is the one that we don't have to run faster than He is. But we better not be running slower than He is. Marching across the world. And I know that's what He desires for us. Well, I thank you for your time. Hope that we can, as we go back tomorrow morning, back in the battle, take these things with you to remind you that says, I can endure this. Nobody's beating me while I'm eating. They're not beating me up for believing in Christ. I'm not getting thrown in front of lions. I can do this. And I know that with the strength of God, we can. Thank you.